Welcome to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. Conscience rights in the medical profession came to light during the COVID pandemic when healthcare workers refused to get COVID vaccines. But concerns continue as healthcare workers are being asked to participate, in some cases, in procedures that violate religious convictions, like abortion or gender transitions. Joining us to talk further about conscience rights in the medical profession is Dr. Jeffrey Barrows, the Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy for the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Dr. Barrows is a retired obstetrician-gynecologist. He's an author, educator, medical ethicist, and a speaker. And he's dedicated 15 years of his career fighting human trafficking within the intersection of trafficking and healthcare. Dr. Barrows, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Richard, thank you for having me on.
Well, hey, I appreciate the work that you're doing in the medical field, particularly regarding conscience rights. And essentially, really, it's broader than that, standing for what is right and true from a biblical perspective. And that is a point that we have in common. You, of course, you're in the medical realm. Commonwealth Policy Center is in the public policy and political realm, really working for those principles and truths rooted in God's word. And I want to thank you for taking a stand in your realm. So last year, the Kentucky legislature considered a bill, House Bill 58, which protected the conscience rights of Kentucky healthcare workers. And essentially it said that medical practitioners, healthcare institutions, or healthcare payers shall have the right not to participate in or to pay for any healthcare services which violates his or her conscience. That bill, I don't think it got a hearing in the legislature. It didn't move very far, and yet, but the conversation continues. I was just in touch with the person who sponsored that bill before we got on the program. He does plan to introduce a similar bill this session. I guess we'll start out with this. Are there other states that have considered legislation like that, state-level legislation that protects the healthcare conscience rights of healthcare workers?
Richard, there are actually several states that we're working with right now to protect healthcare professionals from attacks on their conscience freedoms. There are five states that have so far agreed to pass legislation that is specific to healthcare professionals. That includes Montana, Ohio, Arkansas, South Carolina, Florida. And so Kentucky is a disappointment that they haven't gotten on board yet, but we have many others, especially around the southern part of the United States that we're working with and have hopes in the next 1 to 2 years to get these excellent laws. The Med Act is a tremendous importance to our members, to other conscientious healthcare professionals that will allow them to practice medicine freely without concern of their conscience being impinged by a hospital or some other medical entity.
Have you seen increased concern since the COVID vaccine was mandated to people? Of course, there were many different concerns regarding the vaccine. Some did bring up religious objections to that. But has there been, in the last couple of years, increased concern over conscience rights of healthcare workers?
Well, I would say that the biggest attack I've seen, especially in the last year, during the pandemic, yes, there was several issues. Several of our members had their jobs threatened because they wouldn't take the vaccine for religious reasons. But that has since, for the most part, gone away with the easing of the pandemic. And what has happened in the last, I would say, especially the last 12 months, has been an increase in the impingement of conscience freedoms along the lines of a gender transition, trying to force healthcare professionals to come in line with either utilizing puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones. And so I regularly get calls from our members as to requesting guidance. What can they do? What should they do? Are they in their own right to be able to push against this? So that's really the last 12 months, the major issue that's attacking our members.
Let's talk about that for just a minute. That was a major issue in Kentucky's legislative session earlier in the year. The legislature did pass a bill, Senate Bill 150, which banned surgical intervention or hormone treatments for gender dysphoric minors. it's considered a big win. Commonwealth Policy Center was very much in favor of that bill. But specifically, can you tell us, Dr. Barrows, what healthcare workers and what kind of situation would they be in where they could be asked to participate in hormone therapy or a gender transition surgery? What are the type of workers and what are the type of situations they might be in?
Well, they're broader than a lot of people initially think about. First of all, any primary care, healthcare professional, family physician, pediatrician, internist may be asked to prescribe puberty blockers early on. The recommendation for WPATH, which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, WPATH, they recommend that if you have a minor that is just at the very beginning of puberty, that puberty blockers be utilized, even though they are not approved for this, and then going directly into gender or cross-sex hormones. So family physicians, primary care physicians, surgeons, plastic surgeons. I have talked to anesthesiologists who were requested to give anesthesia for these procedures. More than one that were very upset about it, and also nurse anesthetists. So, and then you have endocrinologists that specialize in these things that get into a position where they are asked to do a second opinion or something like that. So it's really far, far more broad in terms of specialties than people would initially think.
When you look at the gender transition of minors, and again, I need to emphasize this, that we're focusing on minors who cannot fully understand the decisions that they're making. And that's why we have laws that protect minors. We don't empower minors to make certain decisions. Yet when it comes to gender dysphoria, the culture is pushing strong on this idea that they should be able to make up their own mind. If they're a young boy who's trapped in a girl's body, or vice versa, a young girl who believes they're trapped in a boy's body, we're supposed to go along with that. And if you don't go along, in the term that's used is gender affirming care, you don't affirm their gender, then you're the one that is being hateful or harmful. I don't understand how we have science and we have biology and there are objective truths as to male and female. And yet doctors who are trained in the sciences, they're trained in biology, they understand biology, and yet they're being asked to intervene with the normal development of a child. And they're being asked in some cases to give untested hormones, as you mentioned, high doses of hormones that will alter their physiology. Or they're asked to engage in a transition surgery, which will mutilate perfectly healthy body parts. So here's my question. How did the medical profession, trained in science, grounded in objective truths of science, how did they get involved with this where they're being coerced and pushed to listen to children who their brains are not fully developed, and we're supposed to put the science behind us and listen to these kids? How do we get to this place, Dr. Barrows? And maybe that's an entire program in itself right there, but how do we get to where we are now?
Well, that is an excellent question, Richard. And the short answer is that somehow we allowed ideology to take authority over science. How exactly that happened and how did ideology capture medical organizations like the American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Endocrine Society, and in essence, the AMA as well. That is a mystery to me. What we have seen in the vast majority of those is that a very few people get themselves into leadership roles, either at the top or in critical committees. And then these decisions of whether or not to adopt this ideology in this case is made by those committees. It is not made by the majority of the membership. I can tell you that if the majority of the membership of the American Academy of Pediatrics was going to vote on this, it would never make it to the light of day, because the vast majority of pediatricians are against gender transition in minors. But the way that these medical societies work is that a very few people have a great deal of power, and I think they have purposely allowed or been able to get into those positions of authority so that they can exert that authority and change the organization to follow this ideology. And unfortunately, it's the young people that are suffering, as we see in the rise of detransitioners and all the lawsuits that are coming out and the increasing evidence of harm that results from these procedures.
One of the strongest arguments that proponents of allowing minors to pursue gender transitions was to this point of the major medical associations that are also in favor of this, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the AMA and other groups that have come out on record in favor of it, which is troubling and inexplicable. But do you think that they open themselves up to some kind of liability when we know, you just mentioned that there are detransitioners, people who transitioned in their teenage years, and then they find themselves in their early or mid-20s, and they regret that transition. They regret that decision that they made. Do you think that these medical associations are opening themselves up to potential lawsuits because of giving into ideology instead of being guided by best practices and the science, and quite frankly, dealing with the psychological distress and helping that body, their physical body, conform, their mind, I should say, conform to their physical reality? Are these associations opening themselves up to lawsuits?
Absolutely. And the best example of that is that I heard just in the last couple of weeks that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been named in a lawsuit by one of these detransitioners. So not only are they opening themselves up to it, they're actually starting to be included and involved. And I think this is going to be the eventual answer to the whole problem, because I think initially malpractice insurance companies have just thought, well, as you said, the major medical associations have adopted these. These must be proven therapies where therefore we will go along and ensure the healthcare professionals that are doing them. But as these lawsuits come out and go to court and the testimony comes out, I think the malpractice insurance carriers are going to discover just how weak the medical evidence is, or lack thereof, and what's happening across Europe, and realize that they are at significant risk of paying out millions and millions of dollars. And so what will probably happen, it will take a few years, is that these malpractice insurance companies will stop coverage of any of these procedures. And then those that still practice them at that time will have to stop because they will not have any malpractice coverage.
Very good. Dr. Barris, I'm glad that you brought up what's happening in Europe, because we see countries like Sweden and I believe Norway, Great Britain, moving away from this idea that children should be allowed to pursue their own gender identity. And I think we're perhaps just behind them, maybe a little slow in catching up.
Hi, Richard Nelson here, founder and executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. So glad that you're listening to the Commonwealth Matters program, where we tackle tough issues from a biblical worldview. If you're enjoying these programs, then I've got a couple of requests for you. Could you please tell your friends about us? That's one of the best ways that we can increase listenership and help others to think biblically about the political and social issues of the day. If you'd like to catch the longer version of the program, then go to your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. And while you're there, could you please rate us? This is a good way to bring attention to what we're doing here at the Commonwealth Matters. Thank you again for listening to the Commonwealth Matters, and may God bless you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Commonwealth Matters. Richard Nelson here with Dr. Jeffrey Barrows of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And we are talking about conscience rights in the medical profession. Dr. Barrows, you'd mentioned that 5 states have passed conscience protections for healthcare professionals. It's my understanding that these 5 states have passed these laws since 2021, so they're fairly new. But there's one state in particular that has gone in the opposite direction, and that's the state of California, where they are going so far as to allowing children to go against the wishes of their parents, gender dysphoric children, to pursue a judge, to go before a judge or a social worker and to say, hey, my parents are not affirming my gender identity, And the state is removing those children, as I understand it, removing those children from those homes. The state of California is in many ways different than the rest of the country, very far left and pushing this kind of ideology. Are many of your members at the Christian Medical and Dental Association in California? Are you hearing from them?
Oh, yes. We have a significant number of our membership that is in California. In fact, our current president, we elect a president every 2 years. Our current president lives in California. They would all heartily agree with your statement that California is very different than the rest of the country. They recognize that they are living in an area of increasing darkness and are trying to push back against that. But the cultural forces that are there in California are overwhelming. And I personally believe that pushing against parental rights is going to be a mistake for them, because as we saw in the state of Virginia, where parents rose up when their rights were being pushed against and elected a different governor on that basis. I think the same thing can easily happen in California and other states that consider this approach, because you don't want to make mothers angry, and they're going to get people organized. They're going to be out at not just school board meetings, but other political meetings and rallies and that type of thing. And so I think that they're going to be probably finding themselves as having taken a step too far.
Dr. Behrens, are you aware of any cases in California or other states for that matter where Christian or a medical professional has been forced to participate in gender transitions or an abortion or something that would violate their conscience? Are you aware of many people being fired or losing their jobs because of their convictions on these issues, their religious convictions?
Yes, I do hear of cases sporadically around the country. And for obvious reasons, I will have to, as I describe one case in particular, I will have to be very careful because I think that case is going to go to court. But we had a subspecialist in a state who had seen a patient for something that had nothing to do with their transgender situation. And the healthcare professional was very professional throughout the interaction, used their name, referred to them as they wanted to be referred to. His only mistake was to make a notation in the medical record, just simply noting that the person was transgender. And that was enough to get him not only fired from his hospital, but also brought up before the state medical board. And it's an unusual case, but it's certainly the what we're seeing in the future, especially in states that are very progressive. And this poor gentleman he's without a job. The last I spoke with him, and it's simply because he didn't do anything disrespectful, nothing at all disrespectful. It was simply because he made a notation in the medical record. Now, I believe firmly that that is not only acceptable, but it's a good medical practice, because there are so many medical conditions that the biological sex matters. And so you have to keep track of that in the medical record. When you lose track of that, somebody down the road will make a decision based on the wrong biologic sex that may cost that patient, if not their life, certainly set them back in terms of their health. So not only is this individual suffering for doing something against the transgender ideology, but really he's suffering because he did, in my mind, he practiced excellent medicine.
How ironic, where doctors and nurses have to go through extensive training, years of schooling, taught about biological truths, and to this point about correctly notating a condition, one that Diagnostic and Statistic Manual of the APA acknowledges: transgender is a medical condition. And for this doctor to lose their job for simply notating a truth and a reality, and then to be punished for it is unfathomable. I do not understand. And perhaps this just speaks to the delusion that we're under, the darkness that's there. It's troubling. How can people, I mean, is this something that the Christian Medical and Dental Association has issued a statement on? What have you done in regarding to this situation? Because this has far-reaching implications.
Oh, yes. We're very engaged on many different levels with this. First of all, we have position statements that are online. We have actually over 90 of them, and they can be accessed by anybody. They don't have to be a member of CMDA to access them. They can simply go to our website. We have one specifically on both transgender identification and then healthcare right of conscience to really kind of help our members and others that are looking into this. That's one level. The second level is that we are very actively engaged legally. We actually filed a lawsuit back against, it was the Obama administration in 2016. They came out with a new regulation within HHS. It's called Rule 1557, and they redefined the definition of discrimination to include both pregnancy and gender identity. It was a small, several word change, but it had profound implications, especially for conscientious healthcare professionals. So we filed a lawsuit against that regulation change. It took about 5.5 years to work its way through the federal court system, and we were able to obtain a permanent injunction against HHS for how many ever years necessary in the future, regardless of the administration, that protects our members from any direct action from HHS that would be along the lines of forcing them to engage in either a pregnancy termination, an abortion, or gender transition. So that was a huge win for our members. A lot of people have asked, well, why is it only your members get that benefit and not others? And that has to do with the way the legal system works. When a preliminary and then permanent injunction are issued by the court, it's issued for the parties within the lawsuit. So you can only include those that were in the lawsuit. And of course, CMDA can only represent its members. It can't represent all healthcare professionals around the country.
We were just talking moments ago about changing terminology. In one case where a doctor was punished for using accurate terminology, in other cases where terminology is twisted, it's come to my attention in recent months about activist groups that are using this twisted terminology. And of course, probably longer than that, when we hear this term gender-affirming care, that is meant to say that gender dysphoric children should be able to determine their own healthcare decisions, major healthcare decisions. But another term in particular that I've heard is people with the capacity to bear children or people with uteruses. And we used to say that these are women. And yet, in our gender-confused age, we've adopted this opaque language, these bulky terms, and we're not precise with our language. Is precision with language one of the battles that the CMDA has engaged in, trying to make it clear, here's the terminology and here's the right language, and let's be precise with what we're saying? Is that a battle that you all engage?
Yes, we recognize that language is critical. And so within our transgender statement, we deal a lot with the correct and preferred language. We strongly believe that God created us male and female. So you're either a man or a woman. Now, unless you want to, we can get into the very rare intersex problems. Those are totally very different. But other than that, 0.5% of individuals, you're either male or female. This whole thing about persons who can get pregnant is really laughable to me, especially as an OBGYN. I only delivered babies from mothers, from women, and I delivered about 3,500 in my career. Never had to deal with somebody who was not a woman. So it's laughable. And I think deep down, people understand that. And so I think when the ideologues try and push this language, they really are kind of making themselves look rather foolish.
Dr. Barrows, we're just about out of time. One last question. I think of the young Christians who are thinking about entering the medical profession. Do you have any words of wisdom or advice for them?
Well, I would say to them, if they're listening to this now and they're thinking, oh, I better not go into medicine, or boy, I was thinking of being an OBGYN, but now I'm really kind of nervous about doing that. First of all, I can understand your concern and caution, but I still would say follow your heart. If you want to serve, and medicine is a tremendous profession to serve others in and to serve the Lord in. I'm so thankful that the Lord led me into medicine for the many years that I was involved. And so I'm very thankful for that. It's still an excellent profession. As you've already done, I would encourage them to join CMDA. The good news is that if you're a medical student or a nurse practitioner student or PA or dental student, there is no cost to membership, even for residents. So get engaged, take advantage of the legal protections, recognize that CMDA is continuing to fight for your conscience freedoms in the months and years ahead. The other thing I would add is that we're in the process of working with other like-minded partners to develop a database for hospitals that are friendlier to Hippocratic medicine. And so we hope to have that available to students and residents in the next, hopefully in the next year, maybe 18 months, so that as you're looking to apply to residency training, you can look into this database and find the safest places to, for instance, undergo OBGYN training without having to worry about being forced into doing any type of abortion. So lots of good reasons to still go into medicine, but yes, it's wise to be cautious and alert and aware of what's going on.
Dr. Barrows, thank you so much for joining us on the Commonwealth Matters. God bless you and keep up the good work. And if you're just listening to us for the first time, thank you for joining the Commonwealth Matters. Please go to your favorite podcast platform and give us a rating. And then also tell your friends about us. Tell them about what you are learning and hearing on the Commonwealth Matters. Thank you, and may God bless you.